asking some good hard questions about the industry of open source or the community of open source, and how it might affect what we see and do in this in our daily careers and work lives. We have a nice illustrious group of folks up here today, and let me kind of start from one end and or just have people raise their hands as we go along. I think the obvious one is Debbie Moynihan. Debbie's the only woman here that I'm going to name the name of, so she can obviously be the one to pick that up front. She is the Director of Open Source Programs at Iona. Let's see, I think, who's next? Craig, you're down at the far end. He is Director of Enterprise Solutions for Microsoft here. And then Don Fisher from Red Hat, next to Debbie, is VP of Online Services at Red Hat. We have Doug Heitzman from IBM in the middle. Just the other side of the middle. He's the Director of Strategy for IBM Software Group, and Justin Steinman, who's the Director of Linux Marketing for Novell, and is most recently well known for being the spokesman relative to the Microsoft and Novell deal. So it's a thankless job, by the way, I'm sure, and Justin has taken more than his share of heat, starting with the open source conference that was referred to earlier here that was out in California a couple of months ago. He's been to the front lines of this for a long time, so he's well battle scarred and will have good polished answers for us by now. So the format I wanted to do for this was to start off with a couple of controversial questions that I might be able to throw at this panel. Some of them have seen the questions, some of them have not and are less prepared, but we'd see if we can spark some debate. I suspect that some of the questions will then engender questions for you or trigger questions from the audience. I'll be happy to take those. So if, as you're hearing a response, you hear something that you want to jump in on and ask a follow-up question on, raise your hand dutifully and we'll try to get a mic to you and let you be able to ask the question. All right. So, are we all set, Dan? Cool. All right, so first question, Justin. No, actually, this is not for Justin. This is actually for the rest of the panelists. How does Novell's deal with Microsoft around patent protection affect the rest of the open source industry? And does it change how anybody else commercially has to operate in light of that agreement? Who wants to take that question from the panel? Somebody's got to have an opinion about this.
I can't comment on sort of how it affects other companies, but I would say personally I think it's a great thing for open source. I think it's good when people can allow other people to use their patents and provide that protection, and then also to be able to allow individual developers to use patents and not have that concern. That's really where open source was originally initiated, was that grassroots, you know, developers sitting, you know, at home hacking, and for them to feel like they can use stuff and not have to worry about, you know, Microsoft or larger companies saying, hey, you know, you're using my patent. I would like to see more companies offering that type of protection to individual developers to just help spur more innovation. Anyone else?
Make a comment. From the Red Hat point of view, I think that our feeling is that the specific arrangement we view it as not being necessary, given the fact that Linux has never been the subject of a patent litigation to our knowledge. We do obviously intellectual property is at the heart of our business, right? I mean, Red Hat is an IP company. Our entire business is based on copyright and trademark. And one of the nice things about the open source model is that from a patent point of view, everything is out there and visible. I mean, there's no question as to what is in any of the software that's covered by the open source licenses. It's available for anybody to see. In terms of other ways to look at addressing people's concerns over intellectual property, we have a number of programs in place to ensure that our customers are comfortable deploying open source software. One of them being what we call our open source assurance program, which basically says that if we are made aware of any intellectual property infringement, we will basically work with the open source community to replace the source code that is impacted. And there's a bunch of details of that on our website. That would cover anybody who has an active Enterprise Linux subscription or, you know, subscription to any of our products. And, of course, that would all also be made available and done in the context of the open source community project.
That's a really nice statement. But do you think that this deal starts to make every vendor have to take that position? Because is every vendor in the position to be able to make that kind of defense against, you know, against claims that are asserted against some technology that they might be offering if they're offering open source technology?
Fortunately, so in that case, yeah, actually, the other vendors can take a similar position with respect to remedying specific issues by working in the context of an open source community. And actually, the open source community is highly incentivized to do that. There are some other programs also that are open to other vendors. One of which, the Open Invention Network, is essentially a pool of patents that, including our friends at Novell, have contributed to, that is essentially establishes a shared pool of patents that allow open source companies to respond if there was an adversarial action taken by another patent holder. So that's something that is open for other participants as well.
Right, so I'm going to leave Justin to last, but let's keep going down the line here.
I want to hear what IBM has to say.
And by the way, there's got to be somebody out here in the audience who thinks this Novell Microsoft deal is for the birds. And so you ought to be raising your hand, saying some, you know, wanting to ask some question that's challenging to these guys. So feel free to be ready to ask, raise your hand. So go ahead.
I have a number of concerns, frankly. I think that some of these kinds of arrangements are, you know, specifically crafted and have some very specialized language in them that are specifically designed to circumvent the rules of the licensing provision. And I have some kind of aesthetic concerns about the way that that's done. There are different approaches here. You know, the approach that we took was quite different. We've got 46,000 some odd patents. You know, it's by far the largest patent holder in the world. And, you know, we kind of stood up and said, you know, this is quite a number of years ago, and said, listen, we got no idea if we've got stuff that reads on all of this Linux technology, but in the case that we do, we promise not to assert anything against any Linux, you know, anytime for anyone. And that's a very different kind of statement than the particular, you know, kind of dynamic that's gone on here, which I fear actually has a limiting and fear effect. It's not an enabling effect that encourages, you know, a lot of progressive development and sharing in this environment.
That was probably the goal, right?
It's potentially, you could argue that its goal was exactly the opposite, and that, of course, concerns us as a major stakeholder in the Linux business.
What is are you enabled to talk for Microsoft's position on this or not?
What I will speak to is, you know, I'm responsible for all the technologists across the Northeast and working with our enterprise customers. And, you know, to Karen's comments earlier that we're completely interdependent on one another. And I think about this agreement for my team gets them excited about the innovation that's going to occur and bringing that interoperability to the next level. You know, my teams are always engaged with customers about the interoperability discussion. And I think for us, in a sense, sort of demystifies, you know, our connection to customers that have Linux. So I think from that perspective.
But to a certain class of customer, right? Because it only demystifies it for Novell's Linux customers. It doesn't demystify it for Red Hat's Linux customer, for example, who probably, one might say, has a bigger market share of Linux customers than Novell does.
Correct. But I think it's opening the minds of, you know, our teams as well. And
well, then I'm watching the clock. So, Justin, how does this effect make other companies act? What effect is it going to have on the industry?
So I think this actually has a very positive effect on the industry. I want to respond to a couple of things I heard. First off, we were one of the co-founders of the Open Invention Network. We contributed a large portfolio of our patents to the OIN to stand together and say we will protect Linux against any IP attacks. Second of all, we took a similar pledge to IBM, where we don't have 46,000 patents. We have a much smaller patent portfolio. But we did publicly state we would not assert our patents aggressively against other industries. Sorry, against people using Linux. We'd only use them for our defensive purposes. Third, we offer an open source assurance program. Like Red Hat offers, it says, we will protect you if you go to court. We'll stand with you. However, we still heard from customers, you know what? I don't know. Maybe there are IP issues in Linux. Maybe there aren't. I just don't know. And you know what, Novell? I don't want to know. Make the problem go away. You want Linux in my environment? Get this IP issue off the table. So we did. We came to Microsoft and we said, hey, what can we do to advance Linux together? And Microsoft said, well, you know, we'll do this, you know, covenant not to sue, where we'll leave each other's customers alone. Oh, and by the way, let's do some pretty neat interoperability work around virtualization, around directory interoperability, around systems management, issues that matter to customers. And how's the market received this? Well, since Novell's, we've had this deal in place for 2 quarters. In the first quarter, Novell's Linux business grew 650% year over year. In the second quarter, our Linux business grew 114% year over year. So customers are voting with their wallet saying, yeah, I like the interoperability. I like the fact you took this issue off the table for me. And Linux, as a result, is growing. And for that reason, we think it's a good deal.
In a mythical world in the future, what happens to all of this if Novell goes away? Is then Microsoft free to sue everybody using Linux? I mean, does it? You know,
I can't even begin to answer that question because I don't think Novell's going away.
I mean, just
one more comment.
My understanding of the agreement, you can correct me if I'm wrong, is that the terms of the agreement only apply to Novell's customers. There's no application to the broader open source community, nor if I believe the community distribution from Novell, the OpenSUSE distribution.
Well,
is that right?
Novell doesn't even have any protection itself.
Right. So this agreement applies to any customer of Novell's SUSE Linux Enterprise distribution, if you're a paying consumer of that. Microsoft could wake up and sue Novell this afternoon, tomorrow, next week, next year. There's no protection for Novell involved at all. It's only about taking this issue off the table for our customers.
Across the row from Brad. And this will be the last comment because we're not going to solve this particular question today.
I'm just curious. I've been in the software business for 40 years, and it's kind of like Shakespeare, you know, kill all the lawyers. Everybody here is in the software business, and I don't know of anybody, I personally, who's ever been chewed over patent or even source code infringement in the software business. And other than the SCO.
You're standing next to somebody.
Dan, I don't know. Man,
it
doesn't surprise me.
Same as SCO.
But it seems to me to be mostly about lawyers and legal fees and that process and less about the actual usage. And I'm curious whether there has been any patent threats between Novell and Microsoft.
I'm not sure it's Novell. Microsoft is the problem. I think it's customers being afraid of lawsuits against them by Microsoft, which is the point.
Do you want to comment?
No.
And then let's put it.
I won't comment on
propensity to sue customers.
Maybe I'm wrong.
On the legal aspects, but I think to the point of we're moving more towards a world where virtualization and system management issues start to crop up. If we think about our end customers, we're trying to solve that problem. Taking that issue off the table, from my perspective, helps my customers. And so a lot of things get unstuck, unstalled, and those relationships move forward. And I think that's the type of innovation that's going to happen, because the reality is it is a heterogeneous world, and that's what my belief all of our customers will always be. And that's why this is important.
All right, so I want to let Andrew have Andrew Upgrove here have a final word. He's a nice lawyer who can say something about this. Given that he's a lawyer, let's let him have a word in before we move on.
Andy Upgrove, disclosure, I'm on the board of Linux Foundation, also the director of standard strategy for Linux Foundation. I wasn't going to say anything until I heard we did it for customers. And if one tries to think back about all the lawsuits brought by OS vendors against AIX, all the lawsuits brought against POSIX, all the lawsuits brought against all the Unix. Can anyone think of any? I'm having a hard time. I really can't think of any. Unix has been around for a very long time. Last time I checked, Linux was heavily derivative of Unix. So to say that through a 20-year history of safe customer use of Unix and then Linux that it becomes necessary to talk about issuing patent protection for Linux users for the benefit of customers fails to ring true a little bit. I think it was done to affect customers, but I don't think it was done to reassure customers other than customers with whom Microsoft has entered into agreements. Thanks.
Just for the record, by the way, we don't think it's a good idea to either threaten or to actually sue customers.
I don't think anybody should think that.
Okay, let's pick on Red Hat a little instead of picking on Novell. Red Hat now has a thing called, I think it's called, and correct me if I'm wrong, the Red Hat Exchange, where if there's some open source project that you want to have support for, they're happy to provide it for you. So the question is Red Hat now exerting a chokehold on the open source commercial industry equivalent to the chokehold that Microsoft has over the proprietary software industry, where the mere announcement of a product can forestall other investment by other vendors because Microsoft's going to do something? Does Red Hat's Red Hat Exchange do the same thing for other open source projects, forestall investment for fear that Red Hat might just take the business away? And let's not let Red Hat answer that question first. Who else on the panel wants to take that?
I don't know if that's good. I don't think that it's going to take away from innovation and other open source projects, and I think the main reason why is because people want to get support from the experts and from the developers who are actually working on that project. So if you initiate a project, even if Red Hat decides to put it on their exchange, if they don't actually contribute and have committers and people who can get changes back into that community, I don't think they're going to be the primary business owners of any support business that goes around the innovation. And the whole model around the open source community seems to be changing, where even all the individual developers now are looking to make money and to, you know, make a business out of it. So even though you can think about the larger businesses, but we also see in the projects we participate in, you know, individual developers who maybe have a couple of contract workers, and they're getting quite a bit of business as well from pretty brand name companies that you know you would have heard of who are going to these single developers for support. So I don't think the model of come to us, we can support any open source project is really a sustainable model, unless you then have some kind of way to connect back to the developers on the project. And then, again, people are still going to work on the projects because they're going to work with Red Hat or whomever has that exchange, and there'll be an exchange of value for the people who put the time into the projects. Anyone else?
Sorry. So, believe it or not, I don't think Red Hat has an exchange chokehold on the open source industry. Shocking as you might find that to hear from a Novell guy. With regard to Red Hat Exchange, Novell actually had a program called Market Start roughly around a year ago. It's a very similar model but a different method of delivery. Red Hat's offering one-stop shop online. We chose to offer access, frankly, to many of the same small vendors, these open source companies, through our channel distribution network. And through our Market Start program, a lot of these companies, like, for example, Sugar CRM, who's part of both places, Sugar CRM through MarketStart gets access to Novell's channel partners and these small solution providers and resellers who have end-to-end consumer touch. And our belief is that customers are going to want to buy the solution not online, but through their local reseller with whom they have a personal relationship. So, you know, in terms of innovation and how it's getting there, the innovation is controlled by the community, not by Novell or by Red Hat. Novell and Red Hat are just offering our brand names and our distribution methods to these smaller companies as open source custodians.
We don't think it's a good idea to sue customers.
I don't think we think it's a good idea to sue customers either. You know, there's two different models here to build software, proprietary and open source. I can understand, you know, both those models are great models that are market driven to a certain end. And I think it's great, and I think it just drives that additional innovation and competition.
Yeah, I mean to be less flippant, it's kind of interesting because I sit on a lot of these panels, and I have over the number of years, and for some reason, either by happenstance or by plan, I always kind of sit in between the people that say that, you know, open source is a cure for cancer and the people that say that open source is a cancer.
I disagree with that. I mean,
anyway, the you know, where it's it's quite pragmatic. I mean, open source plays a very important role in the ecosystem of our industry. It's a very, very effective way to promote high degrees of standardization. And in any industry, and especially in our industry, high degrees of standardization open up the doors to tremendous value creation. And that's what this is really all about. And I applaud all of the efforts of the companies up here that are you know, taking the actions to create a healthy environment, to create lots of value, and to fill niches in the marketplace, in the ecosystem. And you know, it's we're going to ebb and flow on this stuff, and people are going to come up with ideas, and there's going to be some tendency towards you know, the power of consolidation and market control. But in this environment, because of its openness, there are natural forces that will tend to dilute the ability of various entities to assume those positions of absolute market control, and we believe we'll balance those things out. And we also believe that there are a number of participants that have, you know, some influence in the marketplace that have an interest in making sure that we don't see absolute market consolidation to allow for a healthy environment. And that those forces will be brought to bear to ensure that the market remains as healthy as possible.
All right, Don gets a crack at this. Don, okay. Does Red Hat Exchange put a pall on the other competitors?
Yeah, absolutely not. So first, let me talk a little bit about what Red Hat Exchange is, because I think maybe it wasn't entirely clear from the setup. So. What Red Hat Exchange is, no offense intended.
I took a few liberties, but you know.
So what Red Hat Exchange is it's an online, it's a program that includes both an online direct component and also actually a channel component where we've worked with 14 of the leading open source centric business application companies to provide complete top to bottom pre-integrated solution stack. So for example, CRM software from Sugar CRM or Centric CRM on JBoss middleware on Enterprise Linux. And it's really the purpose of Red Hat Exchange was to address a concern that I actually saw on one of the slides, one of Karen's slides earlier from that open source summit or whatever it was in California a couple of weeks ago, of give me one throat to choke and make it simpler for me to consume open source technology. I mean, it's a legitimate criticism of open source going back to the early days that it originally was harder for people to consume because it's kind of this wild and woolly world out there. You don't know what software should I run, what's the official version, and so on. And that's the business that Red Hat attacked, starting over 10 years ago with the Linux distribution, taking the best of the open source software that's out there, packaging it up and making it consumable in a standard configuration. So what we've done with Red Hat Exchange is simply to extend that kind of model and philosophy to the business application layer. Now, we did something new this time. Instead of just taking the approach of going and buying every open source company that's out there, or taking their source code and writing Red Hat on it, and selling support for it directly, and cutting out these companies that are investing in open source business applications, we decided that we want to support those companies that are building open source business applications. We actually want to encourage open source, the adoption of open source, and the growth of businesses around open source at the application layer level, the business application level. Just as there's been tremendous success, first at the operating system level with Linux, second at the application server middleware level with JBoss. So what we've done with Red Hat Exchange is we actually, everything that's offered there is offered in partnership with one of the commercial companies, open source application companies. We provide level one support, but we actually have an agreement with each of those companies to provide the level two and three support. What we've done really is to take all of this global service delivery infrastructure that we built to power our own businesses, Enterprise Linux and JBoss, and we're making that available to these open source business applications companies to accelerate their businesses. So now, a company like Alfresco or Zimbra or Sugar CRM, they don't have to build a worldwide software update distribution network. They don't necessarily have to start by building their own channel or their own direct online commerce store. They can actually use a lot of the building blocks that Red Hat has put in place. And we also are connecting them with our audience, right, by saying, you know, Red Hat and these companies are working together to provide jointly supported solutions. We think that we're only going to accelerate the growth of and the variety of open source companies out there. By no means are we stepping on it or trying to suck it all into Red Hat.
Cool, good commercial for you. So that you got a plan for it. Now you got your due out of the board today. Let me actually, I'm gonna shift. Just if you'll forgive me, because I wanna take this a slightly different direction. Most of the people on this panel view open source as a business opportunity. You're working for a commercial enterprise that's doing something in regard to open source, and this is a panel about open source strategies. So what are your company's key strategies to generate revenue around open source, and how do new things come to bear in that? For example, how do web services or SaaS come to bear in this, or what things have customers stopped finding valuable in your product lines that they used to pay for, they don't want to pay for now, or alternately things that you found recently people care about in the open source world that they didn't used to care about. So what are your core strategies around, you know, driving revenue from open source, given that you're all in commercial companies? Whether or not people in here don't want revenue made from open source, you are here. So why don't you guys start from one and the other? What are your core strategies that you want to communicate to us?
Sure. Well, our core strategy with open source from a revenue perspective, it's really all about support. We believe in what was referred to earlier, the academic license model, where the software, anyone can take the open source software that we develop within communities with other companies and do whatever they want with it, and we're there to provide expertise and provide support. So our business model would be support, services, and training. And specifically, we're involved in the SOA infrastructure space. And what our customers don't want to pay for anymore, we traditionally, Iona has been a commercial vendor and then started in open source about 18 months ago and pretty aggressively. And what I see our commercial customers not wanting to pay for are things that are readily available in the open source community. So things like what we've done in the CXF project at Apache, which is essentially a web services stack, for example, a services framework, because there are open source things available out there, people don't want to come to a company and pay a commercial upfront license. So those are the types of things. People are still willing to, you know, use commercial offerings with the open source offerings because you cannot get everything that you need in the open source community. So I think it's going to be an evolution over time, and, you know, over time we'll see more and more things sort of move down from a feature function perspective. But I do believe there'll still always be some specialized capabilities that will not be developed within the open source community.
Remember what she said just now. She said people want to use commercial stuff in conjunction with open source. Because we're going to come back to that, because there's something in the news this week about a project called Joomla, which is causing a big furor in this area right now. So we may come back to that question if we have time. Go ahead.
Okay.
Next.
Just real quick, I want to talk a little bit about the use of the commercial there. I think maybe proprietary is the better example, because obviously all of Red Hat's customers, based on pure open source, they're commercial users, but it's one of those terminology things that comes
up.
Fix
our terms all day. Well,
yeah.
Right.
So in terms of the business model around open source, I mean, I can give a quick synopsis of Red Hat's business model. Obviously, we have an advantage that we don't have a legacy proprietary licensing-based business that we're migrating off of. We started from scratch with a open source-based subscription business. So basically how it works is that we don't sell you a license to use the software. What we sell you is a subscription, an annual subscription, that entitles you to a set of services around the open source software. So that includes, for example, maintenance, updates of the software, certified build, so that you know that third-party software, like from IBM or actually Novell is one of our software partners, or Iona, you know it'll work. It's been tested on that particular configuration. Technical support that we have situations where we provide technical support directly, or we are, allow our partners such as IBM to escalate support cases to us. We have a healthy training business, which I think is actually interesting because it's often one of the earlier businesses that that scales with open source companies. Is the pure open source companies tends to be the training business. We also have a variety of services that are complementary to the online services that are complementary to the open source platform software. To the question about software as a service, so for example, we have an online software configuration management patch delivery solution called Red Hat Network. We have an online monitoring solution called Red Hat Command Center that we just relaunched last week. So we have a number of basically a portfolio of services around open source, and that's our business model around open source.
So what you're actually starting to see, though, is a little bit of a line of delineation between Red Hat and Novell, and seeing how we're pursuing different business strategies with respect to open source. Novell is a mixed source company, and we've been explicitly clear about that. And that means that part of our business is open source, and part of our business is proprietary software. And that's how we were able to work with Microsoft to build this bridge between open source and proprietary software, because we believe Novell was uniquely positioned to do that. So like Red Hat, we offer a Linux distribution, and we offer support for that. We offer patches. We offer maintenance. We offer training, consulting. We offer a patch network, all of that stuff. We also resell support, both through Novell directly and through our partners like IBM. However, we also have a second product line around enterprise management services, identity management software, systems management software. This is proprietary software, and we go into customers and say, hey, we believe the operating system is coming down and getting commoditized. We think you should replace your expensive Unix Solaris architecture with open source SUSE Linux. But we also realize that the data center of the future probably has two operating systems in it. It's going to have some Windows. It's going to have some Linux. So our value proposition to you, Mr. Customer, is to go in and take SUSE Linux for your Linux operating system and then buy Novell's proprietary management software that enables you to manage both Windows and Linux, so that you can go ahead and have a complete management solution for your entire enterprise. And that's how Novell is kind of taking a different strategy than Red Hat, which is doing a pure open source strategy, versus Microsoft, which is doing a majority proprietary software strategy, and Novell is really doing a mixed source strategy.
We track about, there's many, but we track nine of the most significant business models out there, and we participate in most of them. There's a few that we don't actively participate in, specifically the hosted strategy, where you consume open source software as a cost-efficient mechanism to support a service, but you aren't subjected to the licensing restrictions because of the way that it's structured. We talked about that earlier. There's the dual licensing strategy that MySQL uses and that Sun uses with OpenOffice. There's the optimization strategy that Oracle's been very clever using with its migrating its database technology onto Linux and using the rack technology. Those three strategies are ones that I suppose you could argue that in some rare situations that we kind of touch into but aren't really core to us. There are a number of strategies that are very core to us. There's the embedded strategy, which, of course, we use open source componentry all over the place where it makes good and solid sense. We consume the Apache server inside of our WebSphere offerings, for example, because it drives high degrees of standardization and just because it's very good technology, and it doesn't make any sense for us to invest in directly our – well, we invest in Apache quite a lot, but it doesn't make sense for us to compete with Apache. There is a consulting strategy, and of course, we have a very large consulting and services arm that does consulting on open source implementations and projects all around the world.
That's going to be our next question. Keep going.
Okay. There's extend and enhance strategies and layering strategies that we also use in offerings like our application development technology around the Eclipse platform. There is subscription strategies, which we use around things like the glue code Apache technology that's a Geronimo project that we use and that we have. Actually, we employ two different business models there. One is that we have subscription services around it the way that many open source companies do, but we also specifically use it as an on-ramp, and so we've got it. We use it as a loss leader with high degrees of affinity into our more sophisticated offerings, so that as people's requirements grow beyond the capabilities of the open source technology that's available, there is a high degree of affinity with our higher end commercial products that facilitate migration to those. And then Lastly, and probably most importantly from our standpoint, is the patronage business model. We spend somewhere in the order of about $250 million a year on open source technology, and we are not a Linux distributor. We strongly believe that open source plays a very important role as a key economic enabler and standards enabler, and it makes markets healthier. And then we can subsequently go in and sell all kinds of servers and consulting services and software into these healthy marketplaces. And so we make a very conscientious investment into the health of the marketplace through our patronage of many different open source projects. So we, because of the size of and breadth of our business, we, I suppose, have the luxury of executing a plethora of different open source business models.
Good. I was just about to cut you off, so.
I'll make this quick. I think there's two areas. You know, we're obviously not going to directly benefit, but I think in the world of interoperability, and I think of consuming applications that are built as a software as a service or existing applications that are on, you know, a Linux application stack, you know, we think of Office as the best place to consume those applications for the end users. So that's one area we're working with our customers all the time of how do you create that one common user interface. And then the other piece is around the management of the environment. So we don't directly benefit from managing a Linux environment, but through other partners, probably increasingly Novell, but Ventella, offering to our customers a better total cost of ownership around managing a heterogeneous environment. Those are two strategies that we're using today.
Question, follow-up question from the audience.
Hi, I wanted to follow the question, comment from the end, where you said there are two types of software, proprietary and open source. And I would like to pose the question, maybe there's a third, and then follow it with a couple of comments before you all laugh. Oh, you can laugh first, but I'll still do it. And that is free software. And I guess what I point out is that, you know, 20 years ago, open source was in the same kind of reputation that perhaps free software is today. You know, the extreme, out on the edge, never be mainstream, yada, yada, yada. And yet, here today, I look around, and no offense to anybody else, but I think the average age is about where I am, which is maybe 30 years beyond where, you know, tomorrow's economy is. And, you know, a year ago, Google came up with their software spreadsheets and documents, and, you know, I'm thinking, what on earth are they doing? You know, this seems such a ridiculous venture. But now you see Google Gears, and platforms can be irrelevant. And I just wonder if we're not sort of witnessing the beginning of something that's actually going to be very, very big and could make a big impact on this group.
Keep your comments to a minute or so. I do want to get one more question in before we finish, so keep your responses quick, please.
Yeah, I think that's a very astute observation. I think it's also important to look at the history, because open source isn't a new phenomenon, right? I mean, until, frankly, the late 1970s, all of the software, and we built, you know, a very large amount of the world's software at that point in time, all of it was open source, right? We had no idea that you could sell software, right? We were completely clueless. It was a necessary evil that allowed people to use our mainframes, right? And you know, even today, we've got people that are running a lot of software stacks that are 30 years old that they've done massive modifications to, and actually causes all kinds of support headaches because it was all open source technology, and they've done all kinds of weird and wonderful things to it. My colleagues from Microsoft were, you know, really clever, and that their core innovation was to helping to invent the licensing model and starting you know, that whole generation of technology and around client server. Then we've kind of got into the internet world, where an awful lot of our services are starting to be, you know, delivered in this hybrid kind of world. And I think that you're quite right that moving forward, A lot of the software as a service kind of models and the availability of ubiquitous high-speed networking are changing the way that this, you know, marketplace is delivering an awful lot of its value. There's still behind the scenes is an awful lot of software that's running those systems. And, you know, from our standpoint, our customers may be shifting, and instead of selling our technology to end users, we may be selling it to the various different providers of these services. So I don't think that the whole open source question goes away. I think it does change considerably, and it's a very exciting evolution in our marketplace.
We've got 4 minutes. I want to get one more set of questions in, and it probably means a less than 60-second response for each of you, but this is a question that came up from one of the panelists who I think probably wants to have your answer, and so do I. The question is, when will are the big systems integrators today, the big systems integrators, using open source extensively and thoroughly in their service offerings? And if not today, when?
Well, being the world's biggest SI company and consulting and service company.
Talk to degree of use.
Yeah, we work with and on open source projects all over the world. It represents a very significant portion of our business, and obviously it you know, we get a big bullseye painted on our foreheads and people come and sue us for $4 billion and such, but you know, yeah, it's hugely important, and there's customers in every corner of the planet that want to use the technology.
5%, 10%,
50%. Boy. It's a hard thing to kind of figure out, because, you know, services, you know, how much is the software? I mean, there's a question of how many of the projects that we touch are open source based. Well, I would argue that probably a good 80% of them have some open source in them. There's, you know, almost never you get the situation where it's, you know, forgive me, but, you know, proprietary or open source. You know, almost every situation is this great hybrid of the benefits of both of those different software models.
Okay, that's enough. Next question. I want somebody else on the panel too.
Briefly, you know, I'm also responsible for partners here in the Northeast, working with the likes of Accenture, Wipro, Infosys, Dell, HP, and I can tell you that with especially the offshore partners, their Microsoft practices are growing faster than the other ones. I know also that their open source practice are growing. I don't know what percentage that is, but that's something that, you know, we're keenly focused on developing that there. So all I know is the .NET piece is growing, and I know from them as well that they're developing that competency, because many times we work with them on joint projects.
What percentage have an open source component?
You know, every partner I work with has some open source. Not every partner, because there are pure Microsoft partners, but most of the mixed systems integrators, the larger ones, definitely have an open source practice. I don't know what percentage of their business.
Debbie, are the big SIs stepping up and using your stuff in droves?
So I would point to two data points about this. First off, Novell signed a partnership with Capgemini recently where they are building a consulting practice around our SUSE Linux Enterprise product line, where they'll be taking SUSE Linux Enterprise into their customers, building up custom application stacks. They approached us about doing this partnership because they think that open source is a big growth business for their industry. Second of all, our recent partnership with SAP, our route to market for this SAP partnership, where SAP is now going to be recommending SUSE as a preferred Linux distribution, our preferred route to market there is going through the big SIs, because SAP said to us, frankly, we don't know how to sell Linux, but we understand a lot of our customers want it, so let's go to market, Novell, SAP, and our SIs to get SAP on SUSE Linux inside our customers. So we're seeing a lot of growth in the big SIs.
Debbie.
I don't have a number for you, Dan.
Debbie.
Real quick, from the Red Hat point of view, we obviously have a great business with system integrators, both at the enterprise Linux level. Also, in the last year, we've seen tremendous uptake of the open source middleware through after our JBoss acquisition. So there's a lot of organic JBoss adoption already out there, and I think it's only been sort of turbocharged by the further investment we've made in it. So I think that'll be an enabler for more open source at the system integrator level.
Finally.
I would say they are not using it near enough.
They're using it more reactively when their customers are asking for it. In the same way you see commercial vendors, you know, looking to open source, a lot of the bigger ones, to try to address when their customers are asking for it. And the other reason why I say not enough is because I've seen a lot of small, niche-y vendor system integration firms that have been starting up all over the place around the world, focused on open source, and they're growing like gangbusters. Like, they cannot keep up with the work because the big guys are not as knowledgeable about the best projects. And people who know and want to use open source, they don't want, oh, here's an integrated thing and it integrates everything together. They want the best, coolest one that they want to use in any particular component area. And I think that's a tremendous opportunity for system integrators. I think they're going to get it, they're going to see it, but they're really in the early stages. Do we see on our individual projects? And first of all, by the way, our business model, the open source part of the business, is separate from the commercial, was all started from scratch, and we've done some acquisitions, and it's really run more like a pure open source business, and we don't work with a lot of direct salespeople. Do we see a lot of inbound? Yes, but it's much more at the grassroots level of, hey, the customer wants to use this project, and it happens to be our project, which we think is really exciting. And I think over time, the big guys will start to broaden out and adopt a lot of the key projects out there and integrate different types of projects across communities and hopefully across licenses if we can figure this whole thing out. And I think the license is a big issue for system integrators, is can you take something from JBoss and integrate it with something from Apache? Yeah, if you want to, you know, not with an Apache license, right? So
that's a great one. I want to end right on that with a recommendation, since we're out of time to ask questions. And actually, this would probably be a better question to ask the lawyer panel anyway. But go out there and look at the news recently in the last couple of days around the project called Joomla. Joomla is a web content management system. We're going to be demonstrating one of the alternatives called Drupal today. But Joomla is a web content management system that's based in GPL. It was a fork of an old project called Mambo. Mambo forked to Joomla because the community didn't like what the organization that was backing Mambo was doing. So they forked, they created Joomla. Joomla is now coming out with a major release, a 1.5 release. That 1.5 release, they wanted to decide whether they needed to revisit the license issue. Between the fork and today, the Joomla community has allowed what they call commercial extensions to Joomla. They said if you have some little component that you want to plug into Joomla, plug it in, and you can create your commercial components. They've decided to take the position in 1.5 that commercial components are no longer allowed. They have to be under GPL. If you want to call a commercial component under GPL, you can, but nonetheless, that any component contributed to Joomla has to be GPL'd, and so you know, take it and leave it. And it's causing quite an interesting stir. The community is about to fork again, it looks like, because there's a set of commercial providers who relied on a clause that was in the original discussion and the original license around Joomla that says you can create components, which clause was quietly removed in the Joomla 1.5 release. It's a good example of how there is tension between the open source communities, the community-driven projects, and commercial enterprises that want to make money on it by providing services and other plugins to those commercial projects. So I recommend you take a look at it. It's an interesting question relevant to strategies and licenses that we've talked about already. The next, by the way, first of all, let's give a hand to the panelists. Thank you all very much for your great responses. Next up is a short bio break, right, Tom? Nope, we're going to keep going. Okay, next up is lightning rounds. How many have been in a lightning round talk before?